Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells. And Doug, welcome back to the program. We are looking at sunny skies and a perfect day in the park, 76 degrees.
It's good to be back, especially with weather as beautiful as this.
And we have an interesting show today. We're going to talk first with David Bradford, and David is he's in the Utah Technology Hall of Fame. So the man knows his stuff regarding technology. He's been the ex CEO of Fusion.io and HireVue as well, and has now written about connections, about how to network your way to the top, as he has done by just keeping track of everybody you know, everybody you've ever met, and calling them in when you're interested.
There's the old adage, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And for those of us that maybe start our careers not knowing a whole lot of people, David's going to talk to us about how to expand that network. Our second guest is going to be Celeste Devereaux. She is running a new business here in Park City called Lunchbox, and we'll just leave the teaser out there as to what it is. I will tell you it is a cutting-edge business here for Park City.
Oh, and there is a pun in there that will become clear later.
And Vicki Varela is going to be our second guest, and she's the managing director of the Utah Office of Tourism. We're going to get an update about the state of the tourism industry here in Utah, and maybe even talk a little bit about the impact of the Vail-PCMR conflict and whether we're seeing any impact there. So it'll be a good lineup of guests. Thank you for joining us this morning on Mountain Money. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
The Egyptian Theater presents A Chorus Line, a musical production and smash Broadway hit that has thrilled audiences worldwide with its heartfelt desires, show-stopping dance numbers, and unforgettable tunes. Each part in the show was written by a dancer or singer who knew the scrutiny, passion, and intensity of the casting call. A Chorus Line at the Egyptian Theater, July 4th through the 27th, with shows Thursdays through Sundays. Tickets at parkcityshows.com or 649-9371. The Egyptian Theater is a nonprofit organization.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. We have David Bradford on the line with us now. David's the former CEO of Fusion.io, and that was in the headlines, David, just a couple of weeks ago with a big sale, over $1 billion sale of the company. So you're also a member of the Utah Technology Hall of Fame, and you hang with the likes of Eric Schmidt at Google and Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, some heady company there. So, welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you, Larry. Doug, nice to hear from you again. Great to be with you both.
And you have come out with a book called Up Your Game, Six Timeless Principles for Networking Your Way to the Top. And we'll talk both about your technology career here in Utah and elsewhere and the book. So let's start out with the book, and of course, everybody knows how important networking is. You have raised it to high art, and I guess when people think about networking, they think about who do I know out there who can help me, and you turn it exactly backwards. It's all about giving, you say.
I do. That's the first principle. Is whenever you start up your network, the first thing you have to think about is, in an audience, a crowd, an event you're at, look around that audience and think about what that individual in the yellow shirt needs. What is their desires? What are they trying to build as a company? Reach out to them. And if you're sincere in that desire, and as you connect with them at a deeper level, then the magic happens. They feel there's a law of reciprocity in the universe, where people feel an innate desire to give back once you help them initially. So I always think about the other person first, and your lives will be blessed.
You know, David, it's a win-win in that situation. And the first win in my eyes is a lot of people are afraid to network. And when you think you're asking people to do a favor for you, it can feel a little daunting for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But when you turn that around, not only are you more likely to be more successful at networking, but I think people that are afraid to do it, if they think about, I'm going to help these people I'm networking with as much, if not more, than they're helping me, I think it makes it easier for them to take the first step. Would you agree?
Oh, completely. And when you find foundations of trust, areas of mutual interest, trust begin to form. As trust begins to form, then everything in a relationship accelerates. Stephen M. R. Covey wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Speed of Trust, and he talks about a relationship that you have in your family, in your business, in your home, etc. And find areas of commonality, and as you do, trust will form. Great things happen.
I love one of the stories you tell in your book. You had given a talk, I think it was to a university, and one of the young students followed up with you and asked you for advice, and you know he was having trouble making connections. And your advice to him is, you'll make more friends in 2 months by being interested in them than you will in 2 years trying to make people interested in you.
Well, thank you for recognizing that one. It's absolutely true. And you know, for people that are a little afraid to network and they're afraid of that term, to me, all networking is simply being curious. Some years ago, about 4 years ago now, I was found myself in a high-rise in Salt Lake City. And as I was going down the elevator, I saw a sign that said, Law Offices of Paul James Toscano. And I hadn't heard that name for almost 40 years. Paul had been my dorm parent at Brigham Young University back in the late 60s. And so I got off the elevator, walked in, and curious to know whether this Paul Toscano was my old friend. And so I went up to the law office, walked in, peered in his office, and he looked up. He, you know, gave it a double take, and he goes, David Bradford, my gosh, I haven't seen you in forever. And so I walked in, we hugged, and we talked about the 40 years that had transpired. He said, Dave, I've been so fun to see you succeed and this, that, and the other. And he says, I always knew you would be successful. And that kind of stunned me. And I said, well, Paul, what do you mean? How would you think that? And he said something that was pretty profound to me. And he said simply, David, you were always the most curious freshman in the dorms. You were always asking questions. You wanted to know. You wanted to learn. And he says, I always knew you would be successful. And I think that is the key to successful networking, is to simply be genuinely curious about somebody else and listen to their stories. People love to talk about themselves.
And David, that also goes to your second point, your second of the six timeless principles, which is show up. So you're going by, you see the name that's familiar to you, so you just walk right in and say, hi. And this is how you once got a law job, too.
Right, my first law job, 1977, Ursfeld and Younger in Southern California.
You didn't send them a resume, you just showed up.
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember my mom, you quoted it earlier, my mom, when I graduated from law school, I didn't have a job. And I looked around, I'd done really well in law school. And yet, the people that had the jobs were the people that connected with individuals. It was their uncle, it was their brother-in-law that was practicing law, a cousin, a good friend, etc. And that had facilitated and enabled their ability to get the jobs in the law business. And mom said to me, David, don't you know it's not what you know, it's who you know? And that kind of clicked for me at that time, some almost 40 years ago. And I've made it a practice to be interested in people ever since then and to connect.
Well, and the good news is, if you don't have an uncle, if you don't have a father that's in the business, you know, using the principles in your book and the frameworks and just really the mindset, it doesn't have to be a stumbling block for long. As you say, doing these steps in your book are much easier. None of these are really hard to do. Your example of seeing a name on a door when you're going down the elevator, and you actually got off the elevator. A lot of us would think, oh, I should stop and say hi.
Someday, but I'll follow up.
But we weren't. You took the first step, and I want to talk about, I think it's the second or the third step, which is follow up and do it immediately. Why is it important to follow up, and just as important, why do you have to do it immediately?
Well, I honestly think that follow-up is a lost art. I speak numerous groups. I spoke a week ago to a group of people in Salt Lake City. There was an audience about 400 or 500. Talked about the book, et cetera, and I says the key, one of the keys is to follow up and do it within 24 hours. In that audience of 400 or 500 people, I invited them to connect with me on LinkedIn or Facebook or other means of social media. I had two people out of an audience of 400 that followed up within 24 hours. And they followed up in a personal way. I think that's key. David, after your speech, I talked to you about X. And, you know, so I remembered that person. But had I gotten that email 10 days, 20 days later, I would not have remembered that person. So follow up, do it now, and be part of the 5% that actually follow up instead of the 95% that goes, I think I'll follow up. It sounds like a good idea. I'll get to it tomorrow. And then it never happened.
You know, David, let me share a stat that was quite staggering to me. I heard David Elkington speak the other day. He's the founder and CEO of InsideSales.com down in Provo. They just raised $100 million in venture funding, and I had a chance to hear him talk. And anytime I have a chance to hear somebody talk that raised $100 million, I try to take advantage of going
sure.
and listening.
There, you showed up.
And you know, one of the things he shared, just the importance of follow-up. So he coaches, his software helps salespeople be more effective. But one of the things they saw was when a salesman gets a lead specifically from the internet, if they follow up within 5 minutes, they are 7,000 times more likely to close that sale than if they follow up the next day. I mean, that's just staggering.
I mean, that is a staggering.
And, you know, I think the follow up in networking, it kind of follows the same thing. As you said, if these students had followed up with you 2 weeks later, you would have forgotten who they were. But by following up the next day, or in David Elkington's case, within a couple minutes of somebody clicking on something in the internet, you're still top of mind and you can continue the conversation. Do you think that's why it's so important to do it so quickly?
Yeah, I think top of mind is a big deal. I love it when I will be giving my speech and I'll feel a ping or two on my phone where someone's tweeted out what I'm saying or connected or sent me a LinkedIn request or something like that when I'm actually in the speech process. And so I appreciate those who follow up quickly.
We're talking with David Bradford. His book is Up Your Game, Six Timeless Principles for Networking Your Way to the Top. And that follow-up immediately, you have another great example of you're playing golf in St. George and somebody points out Mike Leavitt's house and you say, I haven't seen him for a while. And as soon as the golf game's over, you go over to his house. Nobody's there, but as you're leaving, Jackie Leavitt shows up and she hasn't been there for 6 months. So just by wild coincidence, you get there and take the story from there.
Well, you know, I believe a lot in serendipity, but the harder you work at something, the more serendipitous you become. 99% of the people wouldn't have swung by to say hi to Jack or Mike and Jackie, but I had a few minutes after my golf round, stopped in. Jackie and I, she was just unloading groceries, gave me a big hug. I helped her unload the groceries. We chatted. We caught up on a couple of years. We hadn't seen each other. And then she invited me to come to their Christmas party a couple of weeks later. So Linda and I happened to be down in St. George. We went to the Leavitt family Christmas party, ran into a guy that was the CEO of Park City Software. And as we talked and I told him about what we did at Fusion.io, he became very enthusiastic about our technology. And within a matter of a week or two, he'd ordered a couple of Fusion.io drives worth probably $20,000 or $40,000 to Fusion.io. So it all started with a serendipitous run-in with Jackie, an invitation to the Christmas party, attending and showing up at the Christmas party, meeting a guy, and then following up with him. And that resulted in a wonderful sale. And the salesman was so appreciative. He says, David, you sell more Fusion IO drives at one dinner party than I do in 6 months of beating down doors.
You know, when I read that, I thought that was not a good thing for him to tell the chairman of Fusion IO.
Right.
Let's keep going on some of these principles. The last one we talked about was follow-up, and your fourth principle is link-up. What do you mean by link-up?
Well, when I say link-up, I mean link-up in a personal way. That's what I emphasize in linking up and connecting with people. I ran into Malcolm Gladwell some years ago at a conference. We had a nice conversation. He asked me about my relationship with Eric Schmidt and Google and so forth. And so a day later, I sent Malcolm an email, but it wasn't a regular email. Malcolm Gladwell, as it turns out, when I did my research on this famous author, I learned that Malcolm was the number one high school miler in Canada. He ran a 4:16 mile when he was a 16-year-old in Canada. Now, that's crazy time. That's almost a world-class running time. And so when I reached out to Malcolm after our initial encounter, I sent him a photograph of him breaking the tape at the age of 16, winning this really important race in Canada, and saying, now, Malcolm, I know why you're so successful in riding. You are persistent. You are courageous, you know, and so forth. And the characteristics that make a great runner or a great athlete translate into success in business and the like. And so I commented on that. He immediately emailed me back, and it started this now 5-year dialogue of emails going back and forth about track and field, about growing up in small towns. I grew up in a small town in Montana. He grew up in a small town in Canada, and so forth. So when you connect with people and you link up with them in a personal way, foundations can be formed, and relationships that can bless each other's lives will occur.
You know, David, I'm glad you brought up that example. Roger Bannister is the first person to break the 4-minute mile.
Sure.
And up until then, scientists were saying how it was physically impossible for the human body to break the 4-minute mile. And it just speaks to these mental blocks that we all have. Within weeks of Roger Bannister running the first 4-minute mile, there were a half a dozen other people that had done it. And they just needed to know mentally it can be done.
And wow, that I knew about Bannister. I didn't know about, you know, the couple of weeks after when everybody started to break the record. That's
yeah,
very cool.
It's really a story. And the reason I know about Roger Bannister, and I know that the rest of the story is, to me, it's very motivational. There's things that you think, boy, this is going to be really hard. And you talked about growing up in a lower income family in Montana. I grew up in a lower income family in Cleveland. And it can seem really daunting. And there's kids here in Park City and in Utah listening to the show today, or parents that, you know, may have more material current benefits, but they may lack the network. And that's what I really like about your book is it's not insurmountable, certainly not in today's world. It's a lot easier than ever. And that difference between you and maybe a friend of yours that's going to Park City High School whose family's well-connected, You can catch up very quickly, and that's what I really like about your book. I think your book is, what, $20? It's not even that. I think it's $15. I think it's a really...
Well, it depends. The soft copy's $16.99 on Amazon. Hard copy will be coming out in a couple of weeks here, and that's $26.95. But
you think about it. What else...
People, yeah. Go ahead.
What else can you buy for your kid for $20 that could potentially help him on a trajectory, him or her on a trajectory that they're not on now? But go ahead. I interrupted you there. What did you want to share?
Well, you know, you bring up so many thoughts and memories. So I lived the first 10 years of my life in Burbank, California, and I talk about becoming the bottle cap kid. That's the first part of the book. And then we moved to Montana when I'm 10, and I live in this little town in Red Lodge. In fact, I lived in the basement. We had 7 kids, and I changed my job at the family was to change our coal stoker every morning and night. And so I smelled of soot and, you know, sulfur whenever I would get to school. And it was just kind of a hard upbringing in some ways. But, you know, when you connect with people, some wonderful thing happens. And I'm telling you, what people have said repeatedly about the book, and you're kind of referring to it in this conversation, is it's written in such a way that the average person can understand and go, you know what? I could do that. You know, it's not that hard. It just takes time and commitment. The word network is not net eat. It's not net visit. It's network. It takes actual time and commitment to do it and do it effectively.
Okay, now, David, technology has changed, and now there is LinkedIn, Facebook, everything else. I'm on them, but I don't really network through them. I guess I have a lot of Facebook friends, and I have a lot of LinkedIn connections, but I never do anything with them. Are the technology platforms that link people all that worthwhile?
Well, let me tell you, I think I point out in the book, and I probably don't go into it as much as I should, but I have used LinkedIn and Facebook to hire chief financial officers, executive assistants, my head of sales. I think about our head of sales at Fusion.io. I simply sent an email blast out to everybody on my LinkedIn connection list saying, who is the best IT vice president of global sales you know? ? I probably got 30 responses. One of them was to a fellow by the name of Jim Dawson. Jim was a guy out of the data storage industry where Fusion.io was. I flew to Silicon Valley, took him to lunch. We had a great interaction. But then I took the next step that not everybody would take. I could tell he was a big San Francisco 49er football fan. I happen to know Steve Young. I swung by Steve Young's house, got Steve to sign a football to Jim Dawson and family. Go for it. Join Fusion.io. Signed Steve Young. It was a football. I express mailed it to Jim on Monday. He got it on Tuesday. His wife opened it up and said, who is this guy? He sent you a football from Steve Young. You got to join that company. Dawson did, and he became an absolute success. And I owe a lot of our success at Fusion.io to that one hire. But it all started on LinkedIn. And by the way, Larry, I sent you a LinkedIn request this very morning.
I guess I'll be connecting on that one.
And David, there's different ways that you use LinkedIn. So you just talked about one hire, the example you just gave. Another big hire that folks in the audience would be interested in hearing your story on is Steve Wozniak. But before you tell us that story, I do want you to share with our audience that LinkedIn is more than just sending a LinkedIn request and connecting. You can actually segment and sort your LinkedIn profile so they're much more useful for you when you're doing a search like that. But I don't think many people know about that.
Well, I think it's important to categorize your contacts. And I do it in email. I do it in LinkedIn. I do it in Facebook. You know in Facebook that you can create categories of friends. So I create accountants, bankers, investment bankers, venture capitalists, financial people. Doug, you're on my finance area, you're on my friends area, et cetera. And so when I need to reach out to anybody in the finance world, I can quickly and efficiently go to that database and then send an email blast out to that group. Say I need to hire a staff accountant at one of my companies, right? I'll blast an email out to all my friends with a financial background, including Doug. And so forth. The other thing that I would say in passing about LinkedIn and Facebook and so forth, post 80% of the stuff that you post kind of in a motivational way, an enlightening way, a clever way to help other people, and then make 20% about yourself, your book, your business, etc. If you're out there 99% of the time just promoting yourself, your book, etc., then people kind of will turn a blind eye to what you have to say.
good advice. So now I want you to circle back and briefly tell us the Steve Wozniak story. I think most folks know, but Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak are the two founders of Apple Computers. And Tiny Fusion IO at the time, it was quite tiny. In large part, David, through your work and efforts, was able to get Steve Wozniak to join Fusion IO, I believe, as your chief science officer, chief technology officer?
Yeah, he was our chief science officer. You know, the quick story, because I know your time is short today, but I think it's important to note that the Steve Wozniak story starts with the birth of my 12th grandchild. I went to his birth. The doctor came out after the birth of this wonderful grandson and said, "Hey, David, can I take you to breakfast?" Now, I could have said, "Hey, Tom, I got to run elsewhere, et cetera." No, I went to lunch with this wonderful doctor, or breakfast. We had lunch. He said, "David, would you do me a favor? I'll introduce you to my son-in-law, Brian. He needs a law job in the state of Utah. Will you take him to lunch?" I did. I took Brian to lunch. Long story short, Brian, about 6 months later, asked me to come speak at a conference in Park City, Utah. Most people would have gone 6 hours one way driving time. I'm not going to go do that. But I wanted to go and help, you know, Brian. So I drive one way to Sun Valley, Idaho, give my speech, and lo and behold, who do I run into at that conference but Steve Wozniak? I meet Steve. We have a nice conversation. I tell him about Fusion IO. I followed up that very night with him and invited him to join our advisory board. He was kind enough to agree to do that. Now, what you've got to understand that in life, and in the book, if you'll read the story, there are 13 different what I call chain links that connected me from Dr. Judd to son-in-law Brian to the conference that I spoke at, et cetera, to Woz. So before I got to Woz, there were 13 or 14 steps that I had to do, all steps that I didn't know I was taking. So it's the small things that you do in life and the, you know, hand of friendship that you reach out to other people that can then reciprocate in a powerful way.
You know, David, I love that story and it resonates with me. I met Steve Wozniak 6 or 7 years ago. He gave me his business card. As you know, his business card has his home phone number on it.
Right.
I never followed up in any way with Steve Wozniak. And you did, and it just shows the power of decisions and doing things differently. The small differences can have huge impacts, and I think that's the power of your book. Our guest this morning has been David Bradford. His book is Up Your Game, 6 Timeless Principles for Networking Your Way to the Top. Don't make the mistake that I made. Follow up with if you meet Steve Wozniak, and it may, who knows, it may change your life. David, thank you for joining us this morning.
Doug and Larry, great to chat with you. Thanks.
David, great conversation. Thanks so much for joining us. Now let's take a look at the weather. 76 for the high today under sunny skies. 78 maybe tomorrow under sunny skies. And by Wednesday, getting warm. 85, 87 by Thursday, all under sunny skies. So looking like a perfect weekend along the Wasatch, or week ahead along the Wasatch Bank.
And we've got two great guests coming up still, so you want to stay with us. We've got Celeste Devereaux, who is running a new business here in town, and you'll find out what the teaser is here in a moment. Trust me, it's worth the wait. And then our final guest is Vicki Varela. She's the Managing Director of the Utah Office of Tourism. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute.
Park City Realty Group is a proud sponsor of KPCW's Mountain Money. This is Mike Mazzoni, principal broker and owner of Park City Realty Group. 100% locally owned and operated, Park City Realty Group provides boutique real estate services to buyers and sellers in the area. 649-1991 or parkcityrealtygroup.com.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Did you know that by shopping locally, you're supporting trail maintenance, our free bus system, and the many wonderful cultural and recreational opportunities in our community? When you shop or dine in Summit County, those dollars stay right here in Summit County. The Park City Chamber Bureau is pleased to support KPCW's locally grown radio show, Mountain Money. Remember, keep it local, keep it PC. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio with us now is Celeste Devereaux. She is running a business. It's right outside or across the street from Best Buy over at New Park. I was at the concert out there a couple weeks ago, and I saw this cute little logo out there, and it looks like a young lady holding a lunchbox over the middle part of her body. And as I was walking back, I kind of peeked in to see what it was, and it was not what I thought it would
you
be. Very cute.
You were looking for a deli, I
thought maybe, you know, exactly.
You wanted some lunch.
So, Shalesh, thank you for joining us
yeah,
in the studio this morning. And tell us, what does Lunchbox do?
So Lunchbox is a wax-only salon. So we focus on just wax. All right. So it's a franchise that is out of Idaho. It started in Sun Valley, another sister mountain town. And then that's where the roots started, and now it's in Boise. And she just recently opened up the opportunity to franchise. So we're the first store outside of Idaho.
And is the idea to target resort towns? Sun Valley's obviously a resort town, so are we.
You know, no, that's not the focus. It's kind of the way that it's happened for Park City. Park City was our first choice in Utah, but we will have more stores outside of Park City here. And it's a national brand, so it's going all over.
So okay.
Go ahead. Okay. Well, I was just going to get to the heart of it, which is having never been waxed, what is the process?
The process. kind of an interesting, let's see, how to articulate the process. So, you know, you come in and depending on the area that you want waxed, you know, you clean up the skin, wax it. So it's just all hair removal process.
Come on, Larry, you and I may never have been waxed, but we know people certainly that
right, you're fans
something.
Of it at least, right?
Right. It's not a subject that comes up a lot, you know.
Right, yeah. Hour. Yeah, so we're kind of going viral.
When I was at the music concert 2 weeks ago Thursday and I walked by, somebody was walking out. It may have been you, actually.
It's Carrie Morgan, yeah. Okay. She was in from the franchise. I remember her telling me.
And I was talking to her and saying, you know, so tell me about the business. You know, that's just... Yeah, I walk by a waxing salon, Larry, and I'm interested in the business. I'm a bizarre guy, right? But I'm like, so
come
is it a franchise?
You don't want to get something waxed?
How did you guys get started? And it was an interesting story that she shared with me in that it really came out of like a nail salon and waxing business where they saw the waxing side was really the growth and the profitable side of the business. Tell us that story. How did the idea for Lunchbox get started?
So Debbie Lane, founder of Lunchbox, she had a full service day spa for about 20 years in Sun Valley. And what started happening was she just realized that the waxing was the biggest part of her business, that people were so excited and so amped about her waxing technique that they would fly in all over the country and come and see her just for waxing.
And the day spa business is pretty competitive. I mean, we have a lot of day spas here.
Indeed.
But to my knowledge, we don't have any waxing-only salons.
Yeah, we're so really happy to be the first wax-only salon in Park City.
And so what was it about, was it Debbie the founder?
Debbie Lane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was it about Debbie Lane's technique? Was it, because there is an art, like I'm looking at your eyebrows here, they're very nicely done, very feminine and very pretty. So there's an artistic aspect to waxing as well, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
Put too much wax on and you and I would leave with no eyebrows, Larry.
So,
we could always paint some of
them. Real interesting, huh?
What was it about Debbie's technique that started to gather folks that were interested in seeking her out?
So she has a really fast and efficient technique with waxing. We also have all of our own product that we've handcrafted, from the wax to the muslin strips that we use to pull the wax off, to the pre and post wax products that we use, also the take home product, you know, so it's all very handcrafted, very thought out.
I cleared this with my wife ahead of time. She gets her eyebrows waxed.
Uh-huh.
And she has one particular person that she wants to go to. And I asked her, you know, so how do you choose a waxing place? You know, just as it was part of my, how do you research something like that? That's how I researched last night. And she was saying that, you know, the actual person that does it to her is important. Is that common?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You build these relationships. And I think especially for us at Lunchbox, it's really important that we keep the whole experience in mind. It's not, we're not just waxing. We have heart, you know? So when someone comes in, we keep in mind that they're human. They have things going on, you know? And it's really interesting, the stuff that kind of comes out. And we want to make sure that everyone leaves, you know, walks in, struts out, feels empowered, feels confident, And to do that, you know, it's not just the waxing, it's the conversation that you have. That's all a part of our brand as well.
And I would think your business is predominantly women, but men are also customers as well.
Absolutely, yeah. The men waxing is kind of on the uptick right now. So last
year... That sounds really painful. I mean, that would be... I'm guessing most of that is like either hair or chest wax. Is that...
So it'd be easier for me to tell you what we don't wax.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, so we do everything from the tip to the toes, you know, and we do that on men and women. And it's kind of, we're trying to take that, it's not taboo anymore to wax. It's not taboo for women, and it's absolutely not taboo for men.
And so what I just said earlier, you know, being painful. I mean, a lot of people have a phobia of going to a dentist, and it's, you know, the dentist I go to now, there's no pain. Right. Am I wrong on my assessment that like to get your back waxed would be a very painful thing?
Well, I'm not under oath or anything, but I won't lie to you and tell you that it's 100% pain free. But what we do with our technique is that we ensure that we do it as fast as possible, as efficient as possible. So the pain is minimal. And I think that having it be our specialty, it's the only thing that we do, is it kind of lets you know that, you know, we do one thing and we do it well.
Okay, we need to wrap up, but give us an idea of fees for having various services done.
So the fees kind of wave anywhere between $10 to $70, depending on what you're getting waxed. We do everything, like I said, from the tip to the toes. And so it just depends on the area that you're getting.
So it really is. It's an affordable luxury.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, absolutely. And our prices, you know, they go... They're very competitive across the market. And even though we're in a town like Park City where there's definitely some upscale price going on, we're not going to change that. We're not going to change our price.
I want to talk about, before we let you go, I want to talk about two more things. Uh-huh. One is a potential misconception. There's a famous Seinfeld episode where Jerry shaves his chest and then, you know, it's itchy all the time and he's got to keep shaving it. So if somebody wants to say, I'll try it, I'll wax my chest, is that a misconception? Is the hair going to grow back differently and itchy or whatever? Or
no.
You're an expert in this.
Yeah. The one thing that it's going to do is it's going to grow back thinner. And it's a grow back finer. And as you continue to wax, it gets thinner, it gets finer, it gets easier, it gets less painful. So there's definitely a benefit of coming in and staying.
But there's not a big negative side effect. You do it and, oh my goodness, I am so disappointed I did this 3 years ago. You do it, you don't like it, it grows back.
Not with us, you know, and that's because we have really good product. Like I said, the wax that we use is really sensitive and it's really great for the skin. And also the products that we give you to take home, you know. That you take home, that you make sure that your skin's intact and that everything's well taken care of, that you don't get ingrown hairs or it's not sensitive.
So we have people visiting from all over the country, right? They're on vacation. It's July 4th week. There might be some people listening that say, you know what? This might fly in my town in Cleveland, Ohio, or wherever they're from. Just ballpark, what does somebody need to set aside financially to open up a lunchbox? What would be kind of the basic package? Do they need $100,000? Do they need $250,000? What does that look like?
You know, what it looks like is there's obviously just the buy into the franchise fee. And then for everything, you know, for your startup store, it runs about $200,000 to $250,000.
Yeah. Unfortunately, most things in life do not.
Well,
and your logo is really cool.
Yeah. This is a $7 billion industry. I mean, it's not, you're definitely making money.
Okay. Well, great. Well, our guest this morning has been Shailesh Devereaux. She is running the new business Lunchbox. Hopefully the weight and the buildup that Larry and I gave to that was worthwhile there. It is an all-waxing salon out in New Park across the street from Best Buy. Shailesh, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks. And, you know, and like you said, 4th of July is coming up. So if you're going to be poolside or if you're going to be, out on the lake, come by and see us. You can book online at www.lunchboxwax.com. And we'd be happy to see you. Shake your hand.
All right.
And now we're educated on the subject. And when we come back, thanks for joining us. And when
Thank
we come
you.
Back, we will talk with Vicki Varela about tourism in Utah.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
Hi, this is Bob Dillon, a lawyer in the Park City office of Jones Waldo with 38 years of legal experience in complex real estate transactions. Proud supporters of KPCW, Jones Waldo provides local businesses with legal services in areas ranging from real estate to employment law. Our website is joneswaldo.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. We're going to wrap up with a fun conversation about tourism in Utah. Huge industry in the state and in Park City. Vicki Varela is with us, who is Managing Director of the Utah Office and Tourism. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning, Doug. Good morning, Larry.
Happy to have you on. Let's, with summer underway now, 4th of July weekend coming up, let's talk about Utah tourism. Of course, in Park City, winter tourism is bigger, although summer is getting nearly as big. How about statewide? Is this the hot time for tourism in Utah?
Well, the interesting thing about tourism in Utah is that we are now a year-round destination. There was a time when, as you say, people thought about Park City, they thought skiing. Well, now with all your trails and all your summer culture and other activities, it's a place that people want to get away, especially with that cool mountain air. Tourism is just hopping. If I was living in Park City, I think what I would do is I would name three top things that were on my must-see and experience list and just get out there and do them. Otherwise, people just get stuck cleaning out the garage or something. So here's what I would put on my top three list from Park City. I would say Tour of Utah is an absolute must. It's the toughest stage race in America, and we all get a chance to watch it from these spectacular locations. Everything from the Stage 7, which is in Park City, I think it's August 10th, to traveling around the state to see other spectacular parts of the state and see these other stages. The second thing I would put on my list is the Mighty Five Symphony Tour. I think people know by now about our Mighty Five national parks and what spectacular destinations they are. Yeah, the Symphony has made it that much better this year by organizing a tour adjacent to each of the Mighty Five national parks. That's in mid-August, August 12th through 16th. It's going to be spectacular. And then the third thing I would say, and this may surprise you, but I'm going to say the Park City Market. It's right there in your backyard, and it's a fantastic mix of culture and music and amazing food and arts and crafts and just a reminder of how lucky you are to live right there in Park City.
You know, you bring up a good point. My wife and I are actually leaving in 15 minutes on our vacation. And the challenge with living in Park City is you never want to go anywhere, you know,
yeah.
Or even in Utah. I should say Utah. I came out here, I kid you not, I came out here when I was in the fifth grade on vacation with my family, not just Park City, but the state of Utah. So I was, 10 or 11, and I told my parents, if I ever get the chance to live in Utah, I'm gonna make it happen. And you know what? The door opened, and I moved out here. And the challenge is, it's just such a great place to be. You really don't want to leave. And then you kind of get in a little bit of a rut, as you mentioned, and you have to say, okay, even though this is a nice place. I mean, Larry, what's the weather report for this week? Not only is it sunny
perfect.
All week, but it's like 70 degrees is the high.
75.
Where are you going to go? That's better than that. But you do occasionally need to leave the state. So, unfortunately, you're with the Utah tourism. You do occasionally need to leave the state. I'm curious on that aspect. You know, we see a lot of ads. I saw an ad the other day for Chicago. Advertising here in Park City, trying to get people to go to Chicago in the summer to have fun. How competitive is the role to get tourists to the state? And then how do you compare the work that the Utah Tourism Group is doing versus other tourism boards?
Well, first, you know, it's an interesting thing. Chicago from Park City. Yeah, maybe. But
that's what I thought.
There's just so much to do in Park City. I call it co-opetition. In the United States, every state has a tourism director that's trying to convince people to come to their area. And that's all good stuff. It helps us to get a broader view, to have experiences that we can't have right in our own area. And so, yeah, out-of-state travel, that's fine. But there's just so much to do here that you could go through a very long list before you have to book a flight anywhere.
You know, a friend of mine went to a Chamber of Commerce event, Larry, I think it was this week, might have been the week before. And they were saying that the number of people in Park City in the summer is now equal to the number of people in Park City in the winter.
Wow.
But from a dollar standpoint, there's a big, big difference just because people aren't buying $60 lift tickets. People aren't buying $80 to $100 lift tickets.
And lessons and rentals they're getting on their bike or renting a bike, and that's about it, huh?
Yeah. So how does statewide, how does that compare? Do you look at it dollars spent per day for an average visitor to the state of Utah in the summer versus the winter? And how does that change?
You know, I don't know the details of your local numbers, but the general trend in Utah is that we have what we call our three-season campaign. That's our Mighty Five National Parks. And they are so popular now, not just nationally, but internationally, with 6 million plus visitors every year. And those hotels book up, and, you know, it's just a must-see experience more and more. And then in the winter, as you would expect, skiing dominates our tourism. We have some adventurous souls who actually experience our national parks in the winter, and they're quite amazing. You know, so more and more, both our winter and summer destinations are extending their seasons. But in Park City in January, you can't walk down the street, as you know, without hearing an Australian. They come here for upwards of 3 weeks. It's your biggest international market. And they spend a lot of money on ski tickets. And
Australia, I didn't know that. So Australia is the biggest international country as far as people coming to visit in the winter.
It's Park City's number one international market.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And then so many come for the national parks that I don't know, Vicki. A couple of weeks ago, I was in Zion and hiking up to Emerald Pools. It was like going up the Chilkoot Pass to the Yukon gold fields, because you stepped in the spot that somebody ahead of you stepped in. It was very, very busy. And then a couple of weeks ago, I was in Canyonlands to show it to friends, and we couldn't even get in the park. The line was so big, and they were only letting one car in when one came out. So can you ease off a little on promoting some of these things? I mean, at some point, there becomes a quality of the experience issue.
Well, the great thing that we know as Utahns is about the shoulder seasons, that early spring and late fall when the tourism dies down a little bit. We have the cool temperatures and we have the parks a little more to ourselves. You're right. It's we are becoming so popular that we do have congestion challenges during our high season. So we've got to be resourceful and figure out offbeat ways of experiencing, off-season ways, and then off-the-beaten track. And I will just reference here our 43 state parks, which are spectacular. In many respects, they compete with the national parks. You know, Dead Horse Point, there's nothing like that anywhere on Earth. Kolob, that's a state park that rivals any national park in any other state.
So, Vicki, we need to wrap up in a minute, but I want to remind folks of the economic impact for the state of Utah. Tourism is big business. Do you have the dollar value? What does tourism bring into the state of Utah a year?
Yes, actually, tourists spent $7.4 billion here last year.
And this
and
is
that
in a
translated.
State. Go ahead.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's statewide, $7.4 billion. And 71% of that is from out of state.
And what's our population here, Larry? At most 3 million in the state?
3 million
of Utah?
Or something.
So that's,
yeah, just
that's,
under 3 million.
That's $2,500 per man, woman, and child in the state of Utah brought in by tourism dollars. That's big.
You know, it translates into almost $1 billion of tax revenues.
Is it
that's
still,
money that...
I'm sorry, is it still the biggest industry in Utah?
Tourism would be the largest industry in some of our communities, but it's not statewide. It's not the largest industry. It's about 15% of our overall economy.
You know, and just one last kudo to the state of Utah, then we probably need to wrap up, and that's just a reminder to folks during the government shutdown. Utah was the first state to say, you know what, we're going to fund the opening of the national parks. And I saw a report that came out with the economic benefit to the state of Utah was for doing that, and it was a very nice return on capital there. It was, I thought, a very creative solution to a very bad situation. So kudos to the state of Utah for doing that.
Well, and kudos to our governor. It's a reminder that we have a governor who absolutely gets it and will continue to invest in our tourism economy.
Well, thanks very much, Vicki Varela, for joining us, Managing Director of the Utah Office of Tourism. Get out there and see Utah. Thanks, Vicki.
Thanks much. Take care.
Thanks for joining us. Enjoy your summer.
You too.
And we'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery, we know what grows, ParkCityNursery.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Well, Doug, three great conversations there. David Bradford with Up Your Game, Six Timeless Principles for Networking Your Way to the Top. And yes, I'm going to have a copy of it. I'm going to give it away to someone I know and love. And Celeste Devereaux, we got through our waxing discussion
without
embarrassing her or us. And Vicki Varela with the Office of Tourism. Thanks for joining us.
And speaking of thank yous, we should thank our great sponsors. We couldn't do the show without your support. And that includes Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, Iron Mountain Group, Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Designs, and Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. Thank you all. We really appreciate
you. And you know, while we're doing thank yous, I want to thank everybody who turned out for the Cole Sport KPCW Bash. At the Town Lift Plaza, the back alley bash. It was spectacular.
It was.
Friday night.
The weather
night.
Looked a little bit frightful there for a while, but it came together.
And I've helped organize four of those, and I think this was the biggest crowd we've had, certainly, in recent years. And
as long as we're saying thank yous, I mean, KPCW knows how to throw a good party. It's a lot of work to throw a good party. It was a lot of fun. You had your whole team out there, Larry, and everybody worked hard. And we also, was it AmeriCorps? We had some
AmeriCorps volunteers showed up to help us load out, which was terrific, especially since the elevator stopped working.
So thank you to everybody. Thank you to the town. It was a good time. I was there, and it was great to see so many people out having fun.
It was a great locals party. We strive to make that for our listeners, and you turned out and had a good time. And if you missed it, we'll do it again next year and hope you'll be there in this spot tomorrow. It's This Green Earth with Nell and Chris, so please join us then. And interesting I'm going to get on LinkedIn, and since David Bradford says act right away, I'd better accept his LinkedIn in about 2 minutes.
See if he wants to become a sponsor of the station, too. With the Broadcasters Club.
Sure.
Larry, do we have time to give a quick plug to the Broadcasters Club?
Not really.
All right. Go
to our website, click on the silver microphone, and please join us as we build this into the best community radio station in America. We are KPCW Park City.